This is the Schnauzer Logic Radio Company.
And this is Schnauzer Logic, the podcast, episode number 21, being recorded on a Thursday for a change. It is July the 27th, 2006.
Groundbreaking, critically acclaimed, smash hits, HBO original series. And now, the HBO original series.
Schnauzer Logic.
A man walks into a bar and orders a 12-year-old scotch. The bartender, believing that the customer will not be able to tell the difference, pours him a shot of a cheap 3-year-old house scotch that has been poured into an empty bottle of the good stuff. The man takes a sip, spits the scotch out, and screams at the bartender, "This is the cheapest 3-year-old scotch you can buy. I'm not paying for it. Now give me the good 12-year-old scotch." The bartender, now feeling a bit of a challenge, pours him a much better quality, this time a 6-year-old scotch. The man takes a sip, spits it out on the bar, and says, "This is only a 6-year-old scotch. I won't pay for this, and I insist on a good 12-year-old scotch." The bartender finally relents and serves the man his best quality 12-year-old scotch. An old drunk from the end of the bar, who's witnessed the entire episode, walks down to the finicky scotch drinker, sets down a glass in front of him, and asks, "What do you think of this?" The scotch expert takes a sip, and in disgust, violently spits out the liquid, yelling, "Wow, this tastes like piss!" The old junk replies, "That's right. Now tell me how old I am."
Clinton, liberals, dittos.
I'm Dr. Mora, and I'm my poodle's mother.
Today on All Things Considered to Death, Moss.
Yeah, baby, show me your...
Son of Easton, my friends. Son of Easton, welcome! You have managed to tune in, latch on, and otherwise download that stream of bits known around the world as Schnauzer Logic. Yes, this is Schnauzer Logic, episode number 21, being recorded on Thursday, July the 27th, 2006. And my name is Robin Goldstein. I'm your host. I'm your buddy. I'm your pal. I'm also a straight white Buddhist vegetarian, lesbian fraternity boy trapped in the body of a recovering transsexual woman patent attorney with a bizarre sense of humor and a master's degree in city planning. And I am thrilled and delighted to have all of you back for another week of great, great programming. We have an incredible show for you today. First of all, we have a very, very, very special treat. We're going to be playing yet another round of Win John DeCoven's Money. This time, we're going to be playing Win John DeCoven's Money, the Doug Sovereign Mega Challenge.
Mega Challenge! Mega Challenge!
Yeah, all right. Like that, but...
like little, that, but what?
Like, yeah, but not so much.
Oh, not so much.
Yeah, but you have
pace
time to...
Pace myself.
You have
got
time
2 hours.
Out. Yeah, yeah, you have 2 hours. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
I'll have a different one every time.
Doug Sovereign.
I already got a good one right now.
Okay. With Doug Sovereign, who is a reporter of KCBS News Radio here in San Francisco, a flagship station of the CBS network. And Doug, as folks know, is going to be on Jeopardy. He took the online test. He qualified. He went down to Los Angeles. He took an examination down there. He passed. He did the on-camera thing. They loved him. And so he's going to be on Jeopardy. We don't know when, but we know that he's going to be on Jeopardy. And so I thought, as a way of kind of preparing him for his challenge, we should have him test John DeCoven, who now is feeling pretty pumped up because he won last week. First time in 15 episodes. I went back and looked, by the way.
We had him on 15 times?
We've had John, not on this show, but on this show, plus the shows we did on KSCO, John has done the Win John DeCoven's Money Challenge 15 times. And this is the first time that he won. So I figured now he's ready for a real challenger. And what we're not going to tell John, we're not going to tell Doug either, we're not going to tell John, is we've replaced the coffee. No, we've, actually the questions are all questions that we've asked John before. So John has a bit of a, what's the word I'm looking
Memory for? Lapse.
Well, I'm guessing that's the case. He's going to have a bit of an advantage because he's actually heard all of these questions and should know all the answers.
At one point in his life.
Yes, in the last few years, he's heard these questions and answers before. And so I'm pretty sure that at some point during today's show, you're going to hear John say, "Oh, I should know that."
I don't know. I'm feeling it from John. Remember last week he was so enthusiastic and so bubbly?
Yes.
I think he's going to carry that on to this week.
Oh, yeah?
I believe John's going to have that enthusiasm. Right when you call him, he's going to have that enthusiasm.
So he'll give Dougie Doug a run for his money.
Yes.
That'll be cool. Plus, this week we're going to have a visit from Sean Meehan, who is not in the studio today. We'll talk a little bit about that. But Sean just got back from Comic-Con, which is a giant convention down in San Diego of comics and science fiction and memorabilia. And Sean always wanted to do that, and so he's down there, and he's come back, and he's going to talk to us about that on the phone.
Cool.
We'll be doing a plumbing update with you.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have real stories from the Roadway Comics from Brian Cox.
Right on.
Yeah,
I can't wait.
Absolutely. We're going to be doing checking with Jason Nathanson to see where he's gotten arrested this week, plus other stuff and nonsense, and of course, the usual and sundry. So, as always, we invite you to stick around. Before we get any further, let's say Sona Vista to our good friend Parviz Vitali. Sona Vista.
Sona Vista Robin.
And sitting in for 2 weeks in a row now, the defending champion, who is not going to be playing Doug Sovereign's Mega Challenge.
Mega Challenge! Mega Challenge! Ding, 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 ding. I'll have a new one for every time we say Mega Challenge.
Is our good friend Sherry Stevens, Sona Vista.
Sona Vista, Robin.
Welcome back. Now, you got your foot up. You got it wrapped in ice and leather and sponge. And what the hell's going on there?
I hurt my toe.
You break your hip?
No.
Grandma?
No, just stubbed my toe, but I stubbed it really, really bad.
And how did you do this? In any kind of interesting way?
No, it's never interesting. I need to make up a good story.
You should make up a story. Go ahead. Go.
Oh, God. Well, I was mowing the lawn and...
All right, that's believable.
Yeah. And a weed whacker.
Yes.
And a squirrel ran in front of me, and the squirrel was fucking a rabbit. Now, I'd never seen that before.
Never. I pulled out my video camera. I sent it to Funny's Home Videos.
I've seen it the other way, but never because, you know, the size and whatever. And people always talk about fucking like a rabbit, but never talk about fucking like a squirrel. So, you know who this would upset? This would upset Kip Adada. Let's say hello to Kip Adada. We'll get him out of the way. Oh, you were quiet. Come on, Kip. Show a little spunk. There you go. We'll say hello to Michael Zwirling.
Stroke or unload.
We'll say hello to Dick Cheney. And we'll say hello to Harry Whittington. You know, speaking of Kip Adada, and we were just speaking of Kip Adada, I was talking to Jason Nathanson a little bit earlier this week. Jason's parents run a fairly big silk screening business down in Los Angeles. And being down in L.A. and doing silk screening, they do silk screening for, you know, all kinds of big time, big deal rock concerts and performances and things of that nature. Apparently, they're now working on a silk screening project for Kip Adada.
Wow.
Yeah. And I guess he's having some t-shirts made or something like that. Remember to ask Jason about this when he's on the show a little bit later on today. But Jason mentioned to me that his folks are doing a silk screening program, project for Kip Adada. And so when they got this thing, they spoke to him. I guess Kip does his own work. You know, his people don't call. And when you have silk screening, Kip's right there on the line himself. And they said, oh, you know, we heard you on the Schnauzer Logic radio program. And apparently he had no memory of doing the show. Like, he had nothing whatsoever. I mean, and I'm thinking, we did an hour with him. We had him on over the course of 2 weeks. He took up 4 seconds. He had no memory. What he did remember is that we're actually using some of his stuff. That's what he remembered. I don't know if it was in a good way or a bad way, but he didn't have any memory. On the other hand, Charles Lacuadera, for those of you who listened to last week's show, and by the way, if you didn't listen to last week's show, go to the webpage, www.schnauzerlogic.com. And if you click on the little MP3 player, you can scroll up and down. It looks like you can only see like the last 4 or 5 shows. But in fact, if you move your cursor over the player, that little screen will scroll up and down automatically. It's got a nice little like kind of rubber band kind of mode to it. And scroll down to last week's show, which would be show number 20, and listen to the interview that we did with Charles Lacuadera. Charles Lacuadera, WBCN, world famous DJ, just a really interesting guy. Because of his program last week, we had, I think I told you, we had almost 2,000 hits on the webpage.
That's awesome.
Now, normally in the course of a week, we get somewhere between 500, 600, 700 hits on the webpage. So almost three times as many people have downloaded, have visited the webpage. And it looks to me like somewhere like almost double the number of people downloaded the show last week.
Oh, that's awesome.
So major, major thanks to Charles. And here's why I think he's a really nice guy, because he didn't have to do this. He sent me an email after the show, and I'm going to read it to you. It's really short. He said, Rob, thanks for letting me be on the show. You were good, really good. And he's clearly talking about all of us. I mean, you know, he wrote the email to me, but you know, it was all of us. I mean, Sherry had the best. No, but you had the best line last week when he asked what time it was here, and you said
2:30.
And it was perfect. He said, "Thanks for letting me on your show. You're good, really, really good. I was going to put an exclamation point there, but then remembered I think that that's pretty lame. But you are good. That was a cool radio show interview. I can't promise that you'll be rich or famous doing radio because the corporate world has changed all that. But if there were a level playing field out there, you would definitely be a success, and your mom would be proud." And he put an exclamation point in there and said, "Oops, exclamation point, sorry, Charles." Isn't that
very
cool?
Nice.
What a
very
cool,
nice.
Cool guy.
Yeah. He's a legend.
He is a legend. Doug Sovereign knew about him. I told Doug we weren't going to be able to play with him. We were going to play with somebody else. And I said I was interviewing Charles Laguardera. And Doug said, "Oh, my God, I remember him when I was living back in Boston." Everybody that I knew in Boston, I sent emails to last week thinking that they'd be interested. They all wrote back to me. I can't get them to write back to me when I have a brain tumor, kidney cancer, even my mom passes away. But I interviewed Charles Laguardera. That's important enough to get back on and go, "Hey, by the way, how's your mom?" So, yeah, it's cold stuff.
That is very cool, though.
It was very, very cool. Nice. So many, many thanks to Charles and to all the listeners of The Big Mattress and his show on WBOS. And if you found this program and are listening to this one, it means you've come back again. So we appreciate that, and we hope that you will continue to listen. Anything that you hear that you like, anything that you hear that you think should be done better, send us an email. It's robin@schnauzerlogic.com. robin@schnauzerlogic.com. We're also on MySpace. It's myspace.com/schnauzerlogic. But I realize that that's not my thing. Although, you know what's really interesting? I went to the movies last night, and I saw the new Kevin Smith movie, Clerks 2.
Oh, how was it?
It was good. I liked it. But I'm a fan of Kevin Smith's. At the end of the movie, after all the credits roll, they have his kind of View Askew, which is his production company, and they have the View Askew, a little logo, you know, with the animated Jay and Silent Bob doing their thing, and then the screen goes black, and then there's like another set of credits. Like, at the very... I mean, you've already sat there for another 5 minutes. There's another set of credits. They're all the people who are fans of Jay and Silent Bob on MySpace. He put their name the end of the movie. So I sat there for another 5 minutes, somehow looking for my name, like, even though I didn't even know that he... Like, that's how stupid I am. I sat there going, "I wonder if I'll be there. Well, maybe there's another Robin Goldsmith. Maybe there's another Schnauzer Logic. Hey, why would they be using my show name? Hey. I was the only one there. The ushers came in ready to clean. I mean, I think they would have stopped the movie and I not stood there the entire time. My name is ZZ Zabinski. I'm waiting till the very fucking end. Fortunately, there was no ZZ Zabinski, but I think that's what MySpace is being used for, is to generate this kind of groundswell of information. Your daughter is a MySpace user.
Oh, absolutely.
Both of them? Younger, older?
The older one, not so much, but certainly the younger one. That's, you know, it's their first method of communication. They'll do MySpace before they pick up the phone. They do the instant messaging. It's pervasive. They don't watch television. They just do MySpace.
And they just text message people.
They text message and they add photos and they put their favorite music on there, and it's a community.
It's like an open diary.
Yeah, absolutely.
I should get one of those.
A lot of bands have them.
You didn't? No, I was just talking about personal, not my band.
You didn't even know what kind of computer you owned.
I didn't.
What is it that I have, Robin? Oh, yeah.
Robin came over to help me like plug it in.
It's a PC. Yeah.
Windows.
Yeah, that's right, Windows.
I see it every day I turn it on, Windows. Sherry's like, "Do you have a Mac?" I don't know.
But I mean, I think, you know, all the comedians that we were talking a few weeks ago about this Dane Cook thing, this Tourgasm show that he had on HBO. All the comedians who are part of Tourgasm have their own web pages, and they all sort of talk to their fans that way. All the bands are doing it that way. I mean, that seems to be this kind of grassroots way of...
I heard that MySpace is more popular than Google and Yahoo.
Is that right?
Yep, it's surpassed... I guess hits or however they.
Well, I mean, what's his name from Fox? Maya Rudolph? No, Rudolph Hess.
Rupert
Murdoch. Yeah. so close. So close. He bought it, right? I mean, he owns MySpace now.
Oh, I have no idea.
Okay, fine.
I can barely know my own computer. Speaking of comedians,
yes,
Melanie and I last week saw Kathy Griffith.
Really?
Yes, we went to the city. We saw Kathy Griffith last Thursday.
Is she related to Kathy Griffin?
Is it Griffin?
Yes.
Oh.
Kathy.
Yeah, it's Kathy.
Okay.
We call her Kathy.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Did you go up after the show?
No.
Oh.
What happens after the show?
Well, I'm not telling.
Okay. So we go to see Kathy Griffith. Griffin. Is it Griffin or Griffith?
I don't know who you saw.
Kathy Griffin, right?
Yes. Like Merv Griffin.
Correct.
Okay.
But Kathy. She was funny.
Okay, that's a good start.
Yeah, she was funny. She was very funny. But this particular day we went to San Francisco, it was pretty freaking hot.
Yeah.
And I don't think the Warfield has air conditioning. Mm. And that theater was hot and steamy and gross. If you didn't take a shower, it would be a bad day because you're sitting right next to these people.
If you didn't take a shower, when?
When you went to go see Kathy Griffin.
Okay.
Because you're sitting next to people an inch apart, and they stink. And they're.
Wouldn't it matter more if the other person took a shower than if you took a shower?
Yes.
I mean, you'd have to smell himself.
Yeah, because I mean,
no, but I think when I said you, I think I meant everybody in the auditorium. Oh. Everybody. If you didn't take a shower, you made it an uncomfortable visit to see Kathy Griffin.
Okay.
So, guess what?
You got her autograph.
No.
Oh.
She was up there for 2 hours. She was funny. It was cute. It was very funny, actually, but it inspired me.
It did?
Yes, and guess what I did?
You
would enjoy this.
You did an open mic somewhere.
No.
Like 12 for 12?
I pulled out my old comedy tapes. My old comedy videotapes, right?
Wow.
And I transferred them all to DVD. Sorry. I transferred them all to DVD.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
I'm telling you. Okay. I had about 150 minutes of stand-up on videotape. Close to 2.5 hours, right?
Right.
I saw every single tape. I labeled them. I put how many minutes they were. And they were about average of 7 minutes long. And then I went to get I saw over 2.5 hours of my own comedy. I got to tell you, I did not laugh once. It wasn't horrific, but it just wasn't funny. Well, and at the time, I met you, Robin.
Yeah?
Doing comedy. I mean, when you met me, was that the first time I did comedy.
Well, you were cruising for chicks, really.
No, I was cruising for a joke. And at the time I was doing comedy, it seemed funny. I got a few laughs. But then I play it back, and I thought, God, all right, listen. Two of the jokes out of the 2.5 hours.
You got to hold on to it because we're out of time. We've got to take a break. Just hold on. We'll come back on the other side. We'll play a short song. We'll be back on the other side. Don't go anywhere. Listen to Schnauzer Logic, Robin Goldstein, Parviz Vitali. We want to hear what you have to say. Stick around.
I want to know why you like to dress up like a girl sometimes.
This is Schnauzer Logic. feel that in every way, this new radio series offers an unusual opportunity to combine broad popular appeal with truly distinguished radio treatment.
Oh, and this one time, at band camp, I stuck a flute in my pussy.
Frisco!
Hello?
This is Schnauzer Logic.
Welcome back. We're 22 minutes into this episode of Schnauzer Logic. Robin Goldstein, Sherry Stevens, Parviz Vitali. So I interrupted you. You were telling your story about starting stand-up. So
So
what you had said was you'd watched about 2.5 hours of tape.
Of me doing
stand-up. And that you didn't hear anything funny in the entire 2.5 hours?
Well, no, I heard the funny. I just didn't think it was funny.
Okay.
So this is old tape, like 2001, 2002.
Okay.
So I watched it all. And I didn't laugh once, but I must say, out of the 2.5 hours, there was maybe 2 or 3 jokes that I was very proud of, that I thought, if with given time, crafting it and stuff, they could have been consistently good.
All right.
But 97% of it was just not, it wasn't bad. It just didn't flow. I was flustered. I was not polished. It was just terrible.
It's hard
and
work, dude.
It is hard work, but also I think the funnier parts of the tape was my improv, was the things you talk about during the moment.
Right.
And I think that's where I got the laughs, were being in the moment. You listen back to it, you just don't understand where it came from. Because somebody could have dropped a glass, or somebody could have heckled me or something like that.
Right, right.
And I think that goes for all kinds of arts, whether it's a band or comedians. Usually the first stuff you do isn't great, but you think it's great because you're in the moment at that time.
Right.
When I was in the band Redshift, we wrote maybe like 20 to 25 songs, original songs. And at that time, I thought, my God, these are like Let It Be. These are awesome. Then I heard them back. I said, ooh.
Sure.
Maybe 2 songs were really, really, really good radio kind of songs. The
right.
other 20 were just fluff. I mean, it wasn't good.
Sure.
And that's why I believe every artist, a musical artist, their first album is generally the best. Because
Wait.
You have 20 years, you have 20
huh?
years to craft it. You have 20 years to craft the first album. When you go into the making
what?
The second album,
well, like Smash Mouth, they
right?
But there was those guys were only in their 20s when they did their first album. They didn't have 20 years to craft it.
No, but I'm just saying, like
what?
No, I'm, right? It's an exaggeration, 20 years. But I'm saying, like, when you write songs, you could start at 13, you could start at 15, and then when you get your record deal at 20, 25, you already have a 10 years of backlog music of 20, 25, 50 songs. Then you pick your best 10 songs to go on an album. And then when you make your second album, generally, the record company wants you to make it quicker, and you're forced to write music, and it's generally not as good as that first album.
I see. So are you doing comedy or...
No, I'm just saying, it's looking back on the comedy, it wasn't as good.
Did you share this insight with Melanie?
Well, yeah.
And was she blown away by this?
No, she fell asleep, actually.
Shower you with,
she fell asleep.
With flowers and chocolates
off.
And...
She
and
nodded off big time.
Blowjobs, nothing?
I said, hey,
oral?
I've got another thought.
Okay.
But well, don't you agree? No? Nothing?
About the band? About
no, about,
band?
About art
records?
In general. Aren't people's first books, first records, first everything generally the best?
No, I wouldn't say that.
Give me an example of a band that has a better second or third album than their first album.
Beatles.
Okay, another one.
Rolling Stones.
Okay, seriously, another one.
U2.
No, seriously.
Blink 182.
So, okay, that theory went out the water.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. I mean, now, I think there is a phenomena where you have sort of this one-hit wonder. I'll give you a perfect example in a different medium. M. Night Shyamalan, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I saw his first film, right, which was Sixth Sense, and then I saw the second film, which was Unbreakable, mm-hmm. I think, and it was crap. And I saw the third film, which was with Mel Gibson and whatever it was about the kid in the field
right.
with
Signs.
The thing, Signs. And that was even worse. And then I saw the previews for his follow-up films, and I thought... Oh my God, this guy had one good film in him. Just one good fucking film in him. And now he's playing on his reputation moving forward. And most people kind of looked at me like, you're an idiot. You don't know what you're talking about. His stuff is really fine. And I'm thinking, it's not. It's all crap. If the first film was not as great as it was, nobody would have ever given the money to greenlight the second
not.
Film
right.
and the third film and the fourth film. Certainly, if his first film was his second film, then nobody would have let him make the third film as his second film.
Right.
You can diagram that sentence later on, and it'll be up on schnauzerlogic.com. Okay? But now, his new film, Lady in Water, Lady Made in Water, or just Add Water,
and the Lady in the Water.
Lady in the Water, right? I See Wet People, whatever the hell it is. I've been shouting that out in theaters, by the way, getting more laughs than most of the... that film tanked, okay, at the box office. It made less money than Jay and Silent Bob in the first opening weekend. Jay and Silent Bob, I think, made $9 million. That movie made $8 or $7 million. No, that's the difference in budgets. It's got to be amazing, right? And they're now talking about the schadenfreude of M. Night Shyamalan. They're calling it Shyamaladenfreude, I guess, which is how this guy really only had one good movie in him. People are finally coming around to Robin Goldstein's point of view, which is this guy was a hit right out the box. He had a great idea. He managed to execute it in a pretty interesting way, and that's it.
But M. Night Shyamalan is
Oh, sure,
like,
that you can say, but not the guy from Iran.
That guy is like Smash Mouth. And the Rolling Stones are like Steven Spielberg. I mean, Steven Spielberg can pump out consecutive.
I'm taking the SATs next week for my brother-in-law. So tell me how. If M. Night Shyamalan
is like Smash Mouth,
yes, then
Steven Spielberg is like the Rolling Stones.
Okay.
So you give me an example of five bands: U2, Rolling Stones, all the Beatles. But how many bands come out in the span of 30 years?
I know the answer. You don't bury the survivors. That's
exactly
okay.
You eat the dead.
Right? yes, I eat the dead. Yes, right.
Milli Vanilli was hot. Now where are they?
But that was fraud.
Oh. Terrence Trent D'Arby, for God's sakes.
All right, stick around. We're going to be playing the Doug Sovereign Mega Challenge.
Mega Challenge!
All right, you're disgusting. All right, here's what we're going to do. We're taking another really quick break at this point.
Try it again one more time.
All right. We're going to be having, when we come back, we're going to be talking with Doug Sovereign of KCBS News Radio. And after we do an interview with him, we're going to be playing the Win John DeCoven's Money Doug Sovereign Mega Challenge.
Mega Challenge. Oh, but dentists are so expensive. Not at South Bay Health Center, where your dental exam is only $12. I paid more for a haircut.
Wow.
Hey, I tell you, I get into it.
Wow.
Do you remember that commercial from the 70s? No. When you see that girl, what's her name with the Yellow Brick Road? What's her name?
Dorothy?
Yeah, she's under a tree. She's holding her chin. And then the moon comes
down.
Did
you know where I was in the 70s?
Oh, high as a kite, probably. I was home watching the Banana Splits and that commercial.
All right. All the music today is back from GarageBand. Also, you got a little puppy dog.
I do.
A little Maltese poodle.
A Maltipoo.
Mm-hmm.
He's just the cutest thing on the face of this earth. 2.5 pounds of love.
You know, I saw him last night, and
I wish I had that.
That's what she said.
I know. Trust me, that's what I say every day. Go on.
Megavis. How do you do
that? What does that sound again?
That was what the squirrel fucking the rabbit sounded like.
I know. I'm with the story.
Little furry.
It's called the callback.
Little furry balls.
Little teeny furry balls.
Gross. She said it, not me.
I said nothing.
So okay. Normally I don't like these kind of weird mixes. I'm not a big fan of these smashing together, this kind of mashup of dogs, but your dog is pretty
designer,
cool.
Designer mutts.
But your dog is pretty cool. It's a Maltese, which turns out to be a Greek dog, they think.
Right
from the island of Malta.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. And a Padoodle.
And a poodle.
Yeah.
Cute.
And his name is?
Sammy.
Yeah, but that's not his real name.
Shmanuel.
And where does that come from?
Iran.
The president has one of those dogs.
The president has Shmanuel. Amud.
Shmanuel.
Shmanuel. Shmanuel, get back here. Lay dead. I am dead. You killed me, you bastard.
And I was training your dog last night.
Yes, you trained my dog how to nip.
Had a bite.
And had a bite.
And had a bark a little bit. He was barking yesterday.
He was barking. He was playing.
How do you train
jumping.
A dog to bark? Or nip.
I was playing rough housing with the dog. I would put my finger into the dog's mouth and I would go, get the squirrel, get the squirrel. We hate squirrels.
And Ro- Robin's hair would be going to and fro.
Yeah, yeah, and I'd be running around. Get the squirrel, get the squirrel, get the squirrel.
And panting. And yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and making, and then the dog was just like, oh my God.
Okay, Robin, and that's why we can do Schnauzer Logic yesterday? Got it. Okay, I got the email.
Okay, we'll take a break. It's a cute dog.
He's cute. So, very cute.
And you want a dog to be like a dog.
I didn't want him to start nipping just yet. It's I wanted to hold on to that for a little while.
Well, you got a couple of days out of him.
I got a couple of days.
And Robin came in and ruined it.
Yep.
It's perfect.
You should get your dog to suck on your toe. That'll make it heal faster. It will. Take off the sock, put the toe in the mouth, and it doesn't bite. It just licks.
His mouth is so small, I don't think my toe would fit.
And by toe, you mean?
Baby toe.
Oh.
The one that went to the market.
Oh, okay. And by baby toe, you mean?
The one on the foot?
All right. Here's what we'll do. We'll take
him south.
Yeah. We'll take it.
Yeah, it's time to wrap it.
All right, I'll try that.
All right, when we come back, we'll be talking to Doug Sovereign of KCBS News Radio. And I understand that he actually had an interview today with Floyd Landis, the winner of the Tour de Floyd, who's now been accused of using testosterone. And I guess they're looking about pulling away the victory from him.
Yep.
It's a big deal. So we'll talk to Dougie Doug. And then
is it Dougie Doug?
No, why we just call him Dougie Tug, Dougie Doug.
It's Dougie Tug.
He does look like a Dougie.
Yeah, we call him Doug. We call him Dougie Doug. It's Doug Sovereign. It's Mr. Sovereign to you, and the Doug Sovereign Mega Challenge.
Mr. Fatale to him.
You missed it.
What?
All right.
Oh yeah, Mega Challenge, Mega Challenge.
Yeah, you suck. Okay, fine. We're back on the other side. Schnauzer Logic. Stick around.
Stick around for more Schnauzer Logic.
Long ago in days of yore, it all began with a god named Thor. There were Vikings and boats and some plans for a furniture store. Not a bodega, it's not a mall. This hill thanks for apartments smaller than mine. As if there were apartments smaller than mine. Just a moke and some pine and a handful of Norsemen. IKEA, selling furniture for college kids and divorced men. Everyone has a home, but if you don't have a home, you can buy one there. Rent a car or take the bus. Lay your cash down and put your trust in the land where the furniture folds to a much smaller size. Billy the bookcase says hello. So does the table, his name is Ingo. And the chair is a ladder-backed birch, but his friends call him Carl. IKEA, just a mook and some pine and a handful of Norsemen. IKEA, selling furniture for college kids and divorced men. Everyone has a home, but if you don't have a home, you can buy one. IKEA, plywood, brushed steel. IKEA, meatballs tasty. IKEA, Allen wrenches. All about the free, all about the me. Bought a table for $60 and a chair and a lamp and a shelf and some candles for you. I was a doubter just like you till I saw the American dream come true. In New Jersey, they got a goddamn Swedish parade. IKEA, just some oak and some pine and a handful of Norsemen. IKEA, selling furniture for college kids and divorced men. Everyone has a home. If you don't have a home, you can buy one there.
more fun than flushing the toilet while your spouse is in the shower.
Oh, sorry.
Schnauzer Logic.
Welcome back. We're 37 minutes into this hour. Schnauzer Logic, the podcast. Robin Goldstein, straight white Buddhist vegetarian lesbian fraternity boy trapped in the body of a recovering transsexual woman, patent attorney with a bizarre sense of humor and a master's degree in city planning. www.schnauzerlogic.com. Sitting here with Sherry Stevens, son of Easta. Parviz Vitali, son of Easta. That's very nice.
Thank you.
All right. Now on the line with us, this all happened right. Should be our good friend, Doug Sovereign from KCBS News Radio. Son of Easta, Doug, welcome to Schnauzer Logic.
Son of Easta to you.
How are ya?
I'm good. Happy to be here.
Thanks. We're thrilled to have you on with us today. And I've been telling the audience that Doug is a reporter for KCBS News Radio, which is a flagship station of KCBS here in the Bay Area. It's a big blowtosh. How long have you been there?
I've been here far too long. No, I've been here 16 years.
And did you always want to be a radio news person? Did you start off in print or?
No, I didn't. I wanted to be, when I was a little boy and everybody else wanted to be a fireman and an astronaut, I wanted to be a novelist, but somehow I ended up, then a rock star, somehow I ended up in radio. I did have a little radio station in my bedroom when I was a kid, so maybe I secretly wanted it, but I did start out in print when I got into journalism. I worked at the New York Times, and then I moved to the Bay Area to be in a rock and roll band and fell into radio, and after, I've been doing this radio thing for 21 years now overall.
And obviously, being in San Francisco, one of the obviously largest markets in the country, working for a flagship of CBS Network is a big time big deal. Do you think about, like, I could do something else? Do people in radio want to naturally go to TV? Is there kind of a path, or you just kind of make a good space where you are and just fill it out?
There's a path for some people. Some people think that the natural progression is to television. I've done a little of it. It doesn't appeal to me that much.
Gotcha.
Of course, if anyone's listening and they want to hire me, I'm open to persuasion. But from my point of view, I do other things. I write poetry. I write music. I make short films. Someday maybe I'll write some books and make long movies. But, just sort of do the best I can with what I've got here.
And the other question that I have sort of about what you do generally, because I know that the top story of the day that you've been working on is the Sports Illustrated, the sports story, Floyd Landis. But one of the things that I always wonder about is, do reporters on radio sort of get whatever story comes in next? It's sort of the first thing off the desk, or do they have areas of their expertise and interest?
Some of both. You have to sometimes drop whatever you're doing or want to do to respond to the big fire or earthquake or kidnapping or shooting or scandal or whatever it is that takes control of the day. But we all do have some areas of expertise and interest, so some people even have regular beats they work on. So day to day, you have some say in what you do. I happen to be a bicyclist. I've covered the Tour de France 3 times. So for me, getting put on the Floyd Landis story and the possibility that he cheated in the Tour de France was sort of a natural.
And this is a big time, big deal story. I mean, especially after all the allegations about Lance Armstrong that came out not very long ago, we figured maybe that was finally behind us. Here's a guy who seems to be clean cut. My friend Sherry mentioned that he was raised a Mennonite.
Yeah, he's from Pennsylvania Dutch country outside Lancaster. I've met him in France. He's a really sweet guy. He's a very nice, humble, down-to-earth guy. Some people think of him as sort of the anti-Lance because Lance, you know, is kind of a prickly guy. Floyd seems really, really nice. You don't want to believe anything bad about him, so it really is a blow to people who like him to hear that, he's accused of taking extra testosterone, which, you know, some of us could use every now and again. But
Hey.
But I was speaking only of myself. Or estrogen or whatever other, you know, hormones people want. But I've lost my train of thought now. Went right off the cliff.
Nicely done. No, but you're talking about, you know, that this guy has a good reputation. He's kind of the anti-Lance, clean cut. And now we have these allegations of, I guess, steroid doping, which I hadn't really, you know, heard of before. I didn't even know that was a popular kind of thing to do.
They do ridiculous things in cycling. I mean, having been there, first of all, these guys chug like 5 cups of French coffee every morning before they ride. In the old days, they would take speed. Now, many of them, or some of them anyway, I think a lot of them, try all kinds of better cycling through chemistry. I mean, they do blood transfusions, they use synthetic hormones, they take growth hormone and testosterone and chemotherapy drugs, anything they can do to try to boost their performance, and then they take other things to mask it so they don't get caught. I'm not saying all of them do, but I think it's pretty widespread, unfortunately.
Now he's denied it repeatedly, and I think you mentioned that you spoke to him today?
Yeah, after about 2.5 hours on hold, listening to the worst hold music I think I've ever heard, it was kind of like Yanni meets Vangelis meets the Allman Brothers, is how I would describe it. Anyway, finally he and his doctor got on the phone, and he spent about a half hour talking with reporters. He denies doing anything wrong. He is on thyroid medication. He also was taking corticosteroid shots for his hip. He has a necrotic hip. And he also said that he drank a bunch of Jack Daniels and beer the night before the drug test. So he's wondering if all those things combined, and maybe something about his own natural testosterone level also, served to combine to give him an abnormal test result. But he does deny cheating, and he thinks he will clear his name eventually. But, of course, he's forever tainted now, just like Lance, who's never been tested positive for anything.
And who raised this? Was it the French authorities who raised this, or was this another cyclist who made the challenge? I don't know. I have the background of the story.
Well, the way it works when you go through these races, imagine if you hit a game-winning home run in baseball, and before you got to the dugout, some little guy in a white coat came out with a cup for you to pee in. That's kind of how it works at the Tour de France and in all these pro races. At the end of each day, the top three finishers, plus a number of other people chosen at random, plus who's ever winning overall, go right into this doping trailer. Before they put the yellow jersey on them, before the pretty French girls hand them the flowers, anything like that, they go into the doping trailer, and they have to pee in a cup, and it's tested. So as part of that test, after he won last Thursday's stage, that's where this result came from, and it was then given to his team, and his team, they're the ones that announced it. It's a Swiss team. But it was the race officials, UCI, the cycling authorities, who tested him.
So he obviously knows that this is the protocol, and...
Yeah, exactly.
Right, therefore, wouldn't logic dictate that he wouldn't do anything that would be so obviously detectable? It's not like this is some kind of new drug that they haven't tried before. I mean, testosterone has been around for as long as there have been women.
Well, Schnauzer logic would dictate that he would, but he should know better. You would think, I mean, one of the things people say immediately is, how could someone be that stupid? And in some cases, it's hubris. They think they won't get caught, or they're taking masking agents to keep from getting caught. I had to wonder that myself. He knows the protocol. He didn't know he'd win the next day's stage, of course. Maybe he thought there's no way. But it had to occur to him that he might be tested, so why would you, especially when a bunch of riders were kicked out before the race even started. They all seemed clean this year. They all looked more exhausted than usual, and the prevailing wisdom was they're not cheating. So that would argue to his benefit that he didn't cheat, that there's something wrong with this test, because how could he, knowing that he might get caught like that?
Now, this is of personal interest to you because you're a cyclist, but is this really a story? I mean, it'll have some legs for a while, but is this really a story, or is this just another fascination that Americans in particular have with celebrity?
I think it's a combination of things. One thing, it's happening against the backdrop of the whole Barry Bonds Balco steroid controversy, which is very big in the Bay Area. Also, Floyd's story is remarkable. I mean, he's from Pennsylvania Dutch country, raised a Mennonite, rebelled, started riding a bicycle. His parents frowned upon that. They didn't want him on that contraption. It's technology, for goodness sake. Anyway, it was against their beliefs, but they allowed him to go mountain biking, and then he became really good at it, mm-hmm. and he decided to leave and turn professional as a road racer and move to San Diego to pursue it. So you have that whole thing, and then he goes into the Tour de France and reveals he has a necrotic hip and is going to have a total hip replacement once the race is over. Then he takes the lead, then he falls way behind, has a terrible day in the Alps. He's written off, comes back with a remarkable, stirring comeback the next day, and ends up winning. So you have this whole plucky, I mean, imagine the movie you could make
sure.
out of that. So it's a story that had already caught people's attention. And then to have him branded a cheater and have it declared that maybe he wasn't as clean as he seemed, and he's not the great all-American kid that people thought he was, given everything that's gone on in the past with Lance Armstrong, I think it makes it a huge story. But, you know, it'll go on for a few days, at least until he's either cleared from a second test or it's confirmed that he did, in fact, cheat. And that's sad because it'll be tainted forever, even if he's cleared. But I think that's part of the reason that people are so fascinated by it.
Do you think that there's an underlying hypocrisy? There's, as you mentioned, the litany of steroid cases, the Barry Bonds, the Balco. But, I mean, it's not just him, obviously. Now we've got this. There's charges of Lance. It's sort of pervasive across sport in general. And yet, you know, you watch the nightly news and there are, you know, ad after ad after ad for prescription drugs to enhance your life in various kinds of ways. All of that require you to talk to your doctor or pharmacist. And so do you ever think about that, whether and does that play a part regardless of what side you come down on it and how you report these stories, whether it really is not a big issue from your own personal point of view or you think it is a big issue?
Well, you know, it is interesting in our society how many drugs people are on. And I guess there's this sense that when that's all fine, it's up to you, it's your own body, as long as you don't break a law. But there's something about when you're competing, when you're this purity of sport, which doesn't even exist, but people like to think it does, that you're just not supposed to cheat. Now, part of me says, if they're all doing it, then, you know, Lance Armstrong really was that much better than everyone else, even if he was doing it too. If they're all dopers,
right,
just go ahead and let him do it. But people want to believe in this cleanliness and this purity and this essence, this sort of amateur spirit that doesn't exist anymore either. I mean, I have had this allergy, so my doctor put me on a nasal steroid spray, which is working, and I'm sleeping much better, I'm breathing much better, and my cycling performance has probably improved 10% in the last month.
No kidding.
And I asked my doctor, and I said, hey, this is great. I said, so is this thing a steroid or what? I guess I can't be in the Olympics now. And he said, actually, it is a steroid. He said it's a very minor one. It's cortisone. He said, but no, the reason you're cycling better is because you're finally getting oxygen to your muscles. You weren't getting enough oxygen in your body before, and now you are.
Right.
He said, this is more, it's your true performance. You're not really enhancing it. You're removing an impediment. So, you know, there's nothing wrong with me doing that, but if I were in the Tour de France, I couldn't take that thing. So, I you know, they want to have really strict rules so that people think it's all clean, but that's probably a bit Pollyanna-ish and a bit, you know, naive to think that it would ever really be that way.
And what you said before I thought was very interesting, because when the whole Barry Bonds baseball steroid thing really came to light about, I guess, a little over a year ago, when it probably was longer than that, but when it really began to sort of percolate through, somebody said to me, because they were only focusing on the home run hitters, and somebody said to me, well, you know, the pitchers are taking this too. And I said, they are? And they go, well, of course, how do you think they're recovering so fast? I mean, usually these guys would, you know, have to have longer periods of time. They're recovering much faster. The turnaround is quicker. And if you look at somebody like Jason Schmidt, and I don't actually know whether Schmidt was taking anything or not, he's actually a much skinnier guy this year than he was a couple of years ago. He doesn't have that kind of big head, big neck thing going on there. He's actually kind of a tall, skinny kid, not what he looked like a few years ago. And so my sense is, well, if the pitchers are taking it and the hitters are taking it and it's all, the playing field is leveled. It's just leveled artificially, but it's leveled nonetheless. Why is that a problem?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of agree with you, and some people do, and say, well, what's the difference? Let them do it. It's their bodies. I mean, if they're all taking it, then that is a level playing field, and you'll still know who's better than who isn't. You know, the first players banned for under the new steroid rules or suspended under the new steroid rules in baseball were pitchers, and there actually, I think, have been more pitchers than hitters in the minor leagues, and Jason Grimsley at the major league level caught with steroids. Yeah, sure, if you're a power pitcher, that's going to help you just as much as if you're a power hitter. So, I mean, that's a good point you make, and one of the cyclists I talked to today, a former amateur racer here in the Bay Area, said, you know what, maybe we should just let them dope. What's the difference? If they're all going to do it anyway, let them do it, have it be controlled, have it be administered safely, and...
I think it should be mandatory, quite frankly, and I mean for everyone.
Like, I guess part of it is people don't want to just go see freaks, although they see them in other environs, but go see freaks compete. I mean, they want to think this is real, and oh, what an incredible athlete, and they'll say, well, if that's the case, shoot me up and I'll go play.
Right,
know?
That's why WrestleMania is not so popular.
Exactly.
You're absolutely right. I hadn't thought about
that.
That's
right.
But you obviously have an opinion, and one of the things that I think is so interesting about modern journalism is there's another sort of fallacy that's laid on top of the reality, and that's journalists are not supposed to have an opinion. They're reporting objective fact, whatever the hell that means. You clearly have a strong opinion about this story. I'm guessing you have strong opinions about other stories. I know that you covered New Orleans last year, and you're going back there, is that right?
You know I have strong opinions because we spend time together discussing some of them, but I will say one thing about journalism, it's increasingly frustrating not being able to express your opinion. I think that's one reason why you have podcasts and talk radio and all of that becoming more popular, is it's difficult for journalists who want to express their opinions and can't. They chafe at the restrictions, and I don't express my opinions generally in the news that I report. You try to be objective, you try to present both sides and be balanced. In sports, you have a little more leeway because sports is sort of the toy department of the news, so you can report rumors. Oh, we hear they're going to trade Barry Bonds for, you know, a bucket of steroids, whatever. You can report rumor. You can offer innuendo and opinion. So when you get into sports news, which is what I'm kind of doing today, you still got to keep it straight, but there's room for a little bit of opinion.
Gotcha.
Generally, though, you know, politics, God forbid you express how you feel. And as far as New Orleans, you know, when you're on the scene of an extraordinary story like that, you can be a little, you know, this is what I'm seeing and this is what I think about it. It took me a few days when I was down there last year to get to the point of doing that because I wasn't sure it was appropriate, but it became clear after a couple of days that it would be okay, so I was a little more candid about what I was seeing.
Sure.
That's still not clear. The first anniversary of Hurricane Katrina is August 29th. I am supposed to go cover that. But then Arnold Schwarzenegger was going to go to Mexico in August, and it was decided I should go along on that trip instead and not go to New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's been postponed till November because of the uncertainty over who Mexico's next president will be. So New Orleans may be back on. But I'm also supposed to go to New York to cover the fifth anniversary of 9/11, so I'm not sure yet if we're going to do all three or two of, you know, one from column A and one from column B. So
I see.
I may be going to New Orleans. I may be going to New York. I am going to go to Mexico, but that's not till November.
Good times, as they say.
Oh, yeah. Party on. Interesting stuff to do, though.
Absolutely. But on the other hand, does it ever get you down?
Well, of course, especially something like Katrina. I mean, that was just horrible. I mean, it was devastating. It was difficult working conditions. You saw terrible things. It gets you down, sure. But I figure by now I have so many layers of post-traumatic stress syndrome that, you know, disorder that, newspaper, doesn't get through as much.
Newspaper writers obviously were, you know, traditionally cast as hard-writing, you know, hard-working, hard-drinking. I mean, there was certainly...
Hard-bitten.
Yeah, hard-bitten, and certainly alcohol played a part, I think, in helping them get through what they were trying to get through. As well, Anderson Cooper, a coke problem? Is that true? Or?
God, I hope not. I know Anderson. I've known Anderson since he was about 12, maybe 14.
Is that right?
Yeah, from New York. His older brother and my younger sister were best friends and were co-editors of their high school literary magazine. So I sat next to Anderson with his mom, Gloria Vanderbilt, when his older brother graduated from high school.
Wow.
You know, everyone has a coke problem at some point, don't they, Robin? But I hope he doesn't have one. I find that for me, testosterone and cortisone and other steroids kind of get me through my day. So.
All right. We are talking with Doug Sovereign from...
I'm going to be in big trouble now. Who was it? Some congressman on the Colbert Report the other night who talked about doing cocaine, but it was all just a gag.
Well, Colbert said to him on the show, that's right. He said to him, you're running unopposed, so obviously you have no reason to worry about anyone voting for the other guy. So now that you're unopposed, say something to me that you know would get you unelected, that you would not be elected.
I love to do cocaine because...
Yes, exactly.
It's a fun thing to do, or to...
It's a brilliant, brilliant show. Here's what we're going to do. We'll take a quick break. We will play a short song. We'll come back with John DeCoven. And you are going to be playing, well, hopefully you'll have a chance to play Jeopardy, right? That's you've gone through the hurdles that are necessary. Now, is there a no-steroid policy for playing
Jeopardy? God, I didn't tell me anything about any kind of drug test. I hope not.
They're going to have you pee into Alex's coffee.
Oh, God.
Oh, okay.
I have jumped all the hoops and... past all the hurdles and all those other analogies or whatever.
Except for this one. You haven't played the Win John DeCoven's Money Doug Sovereign Mega Challenge.
No, I haven't. And I'm still waiting for the call from Jeopardy. I'm supposed to be on sometime in the next year. But in the meantime, this is a great way to get ready.
Wasn't there a...
Parviz, I said the Doug Sovereign Win John DeCoven's Mega Challenge.
Mega Challenge! Mega Challenge!
All right. You missed it, dude. You lost your...
Doug.
Yes.
How's it going?
Are we still on?
We're still on. Listen, wasn't there this week a big with the Ken Jennings and the Jeopardy thing? Didn't he like?
Yeah, I haven't read it yet. A variety of people have emailed me that. I haven't looked at it yet. Apparently, he dissed Alex really badly on his website or something.
Yeah,
and then he said it was a joke. He said it was a joke. He said, "You know, I have a great Mormon sense of humor."
Oh, he just needs
publicity.
Oh,
he now says the whole thing was a joke?
Yes,
he's taking steroids.
That's right. He is a Mormon. We should hook him up with Floyd Landis.
Yeah,
comparative religions of. Something or other.
Mesopotamia. All right. We'll take a break. We'll ask Sherry not to talk quite so much during the next segment. Just let you, have you even said hello to John? I mean, hello to Doug.
Hey, Doug. How's it going?
All right, good.
What are you wearing?
Whoa.
Hey.
Later.
This is, I want you to let you know that the women are not part of, are not the parvises of my imagination. I meant they're not figments of my imagination.
Imagination.
Okay, fine. All right, well, we're going to take a break. We're back on the other side. We're talking with Doug Sovereign. We've got Parviz Vitali and Sherry Stevens and you, so stick around.
I think you're a refreshing gay boy.
Schnauzer Logic.
I never moved to California.
Empire State Building.
Actually, it's a second bedroom with some bath mats taped to the wall.
And broadcasting loud to all time zones around the world in stereo.
It's a medium bitrate podcast. Oh, and it's mono.
This is
Schnauzer Logic.
Welcome back. We're just beginning the second hour of this week's Schnauzer Logic for Thursday, 27th of July, 2006. My name is Robin Goldstein, host buddy and pal, www.schnauzerlogic.com. That's the webpage, robin@schnauzerlogic.com. That is the email address. And we punched down the button here. We should have both our special guests for today, Doug Sovereign. Son of Easter Doug, welcome back.
I'm still here.
And of our good friend, stand-up comedian and comedy impresario extraordinaire, John DeCoven. How are you, John? Son of Easter?
Son of Easter, Robin.
It's good to have you.
Given your friend here all the details and told me he had nothing to worry about.
All right. Are you on a speakerphone there? Or?
Can you not? Hold on a second.
You mean you can tell?
Okay. How's
that? Yeah, that's actually okay. Better. Cool. All right, fine. John, last week, the listeners to the show know that we play John Win John DeCoven's Money, you know, every 3 or 4 weeks. It's a little kind of special treat. Last week, John won. Now, I went back and looked, John. We played 10 times back on KSCO.
Really?
Yeah, okay. We played 10 times. We've played about 5 times on this show, so we've played about 15 times, and so you're 1 for 15.
Nice.
Which is a pretty sweet record. And I kind of felt that you were a little cocky last week after the show. Like, I won my money. I got the money.
I was just going to say, because I thought it was funny after the, you know, after it was over what you and Parviz were saying. So I talked to my buddy Andrew. I'm like, did you listen to it? He's like, no, when it was over, I just stopped listening.
Perfect.
Perfect. Exactly.
Perfect. Great. So we'll get more listeners from Andrew. Excellent. All right, so here today you're going to be defending your honor against Doug Sovereign, who is a qualifier in the whole world of Jeopardy thing. John, you ever try out for Jeopardy?
Never.
Wheel of Fortune?
Never.
No.
The closest I got was I was going to go try out for Win Ben Stein's Money.
Yes.
And the woman I even talked to on the phone said, "I guarantee you're going to get on just because you sound like him."
Okay.
And this was like a week before 9/11. 9/11 happened, couldn't get down there, and it never materialized.
Oh.
So that's it.
Sorry, Eeyore. All right.
See, the terrorists won again.
Exactly.
If you don't play the game, that's right. You got to be in it to win it. All right, here's how it works. It's normally the best of 10 test of knowledge, but today, because we're playing Win John DeCoven's Money, the Doug Sovereign Mega Challenge.
Mega Challenge! Mega Challenge!
Come and knock on our door. Come and knock on our door.
Right.
We've been waiting for you.
Okay. Andy!
Okay, we're going to play 20 questions, so it's the best of 20.
Wow.
It's the best of 20.
Wow.
So we're going to let Doug go first because he's the challenger, all right?
Okay.
And John, you're going to go into your soundproof bathroom and time it out, and we'll be good to go, all right?
Okay.
All right, John,
I'll
talk to you soon. Yeah.
5 minutes.
Absolutely, no worries.
Okay. Bye.
All right.
So I get all 20 and then he gets all 20?
Yeah, you get all 20 and
okay.
He gets all 20. Are you
okay.
Still there? All right. Now what John doesn't know is that these are all questions that we have asked John before in the 15 other times that we've played with John DeCoven's Money.
So in theory, he should know some of them.
My money's on you, dude. All right. Whenever you're ready, let us know, and we'll start the game.
I'm ready. I don't have to answer in the form of a question, though.
No, you do not. No,
okay.
You do not. All right.
Okay,
Ian,
Alex.
Here
I mean, Robin.
All right. Ian, yeah, he's got a nicer mustache, but I got better hair. Three, two, one. Here we go. All right. Question number one. Who said, from each according to his abilities, for each according to his needs?
Karl Marx.
Okay. Number two. Neil Armstrong was the first man to set foot on the moon. Who was the first American sent into orbit?
Alan Shepard.
Okay.
Wait, sent into orbit?
Yes, that's right.
Not sent into space?
No. Well, yeah, sent into space.
Okay, Alan Shepard.
Okay. Number three, diamond and graphite are two forms of the same element. What's that element?
Boy, that's a good question. What diamond and graphite? Graphite is lead. Diamond isn't lead, is it? Carbon.
Okay,
that's
your answer, carbon, all right.
Yeah.
The Wizard of Menlo Park said genius is 99% perspiration, 1% inspiration. Who is that wizard?
Wizard of Menlo Park, I'm going to guess it was Packard.
Okay.
Oh, Menlo Park, Edison, I'm sorry. I was thinking Menlo Park, California. That would be Thomas Edison.
Okay. Let's see, this is a gimme. He's the creator of both Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune.
Merv Griffin.
All right. He was the first person ever to appear on the cover of the Rolling Stone.
On the cover of Rolling Stone. Boy, who was on the first cover of that? I don't really know. Let's go with Bob Dylan.
All right. This was the capital.
That's a good one to know. I want to know the answer.
Okay. This was the capital of the United States from 1789 to 1790.
New York.
All right.
Or it could have been Philly. I'm going to New York.
Okay. Edwin Land invented this camera in 1947.
Polaroid.
Okay. This mixed drink is made with gin, lemon, and powdered sugar.
That would be the ich. Gin, lemon, and powdered sugar?
Yes, the American name for the ich.
Slow gin fizz? I don't know. We'll go with slow gin.
Okay.
I don't think that's right, but I'll go with it.
Supermodel Elle Macpherson was born in this country.
Australia.
Okay.
Am I getting them all wrong?
Well, we'll tell you at the end. Okay. What is the name of the galaxy to which the Earth's sun belongs?
What is the name of our galaxy? Alpha... No, that's a star. Milky Way.
Okay.
It's been a long day.
What is the English translation of the Latin phrase cogito ergo sum?
I think therefore I am.
Okay. Let's see here.
Although, no, it's something about knowledge. But
all
I'll
right,
go with that.
So let's see. That's we've done 12. All right, now we're on to the second page here. Just waiting for the music to cycle around here, and we'll do it some more. All right, here we go. Number 13, in cognac, what do the letters VSOP stand for?
Very special old port.
Okay. Let's see. Name one of the two original Nobel Prizes. They were given for two things. You just have to name one of the first two.
Chemistry.
Okay. This well-known actor is the father to Emilio Estevez.
Martin Afro Sheen.
Okay. He won 7 gold medals for swimming in the 1972 Olympics.
Did he take steroids? Mark Spitz.
All right. Daughter of another well-known actor, she was the youngest person ever to win an Oscar.
Tatum O'Neill. I was thinking Shirley Temple, but that wasn't a real Oscar. So Tatum O'Neill.
All right.
What number, yeah.
Number 18. Hold on.
Two more.
Actually, you can go start drinking now, dude. Doesn't really make any difference. His given name is Gordon Sumner.
Sting.
Who hosted the first episode of Saturday Night Live?
Let's see. I remember watching it. I believe it was George Carlin.
All right. And all interstate highways that run coast to coast end in what number?
Zero.
All right, and we'll call time. All right, John, are you back? All right, let's see. So let me just do a little tally here. 1, 2,
John?
Yeah, are you there, John?
Okay.
All right, Doug got 17 out of 20 right.
Oh, good. I wasn't so sure on some of those.
Doug got, I'll let you know which ones you didn't afterwards. One okay. was, a couple were very yeah. close, but... yeah, he got 17 out of 20. You feeling good?
I feel better now.
I think we're talking to John.
Yeah, John.
Who's there, by the way? Is it just Parviz?
Parviz and Sherry Stevens. Say hello to Vista.
Hi, John. Donna. How are you doing?
Oh, repeat from last time.
Yep.
Because she brought you good luck last time. I thought we needed to have Sherry back.
All right. Sounds awesome.
All right. So,
By the way, Doug, are you MOT?
Am I MOT? Yes, I am.
Oh, right on. Okay.
You know, so I'm really uncomfortable when you say that, by the way.
And it always comes up.
Yeah, I don't understand.
Well, Logan sounds Dutch to me.
Yeah. Well,
No.
Why is that important, especially in these times of world strife where people are killing each other because of the...
I could have said, are you a Lanceman, you know, but a lot of people don't know that out here.
Why is that important?
What made you ask?
Yeah, why is that important anyhow?
Because there's a certain bonding between Jews.
But why would you think... Did you think I was or wasn't?
Well, it
once you got
like
17
more,
out of 20,
your last name didn't imply it like mine.
Right,
so
exactly.
Just wanted to establish
it was anglicized. It was anglicized like 100 years ago.
The fact that he got 17 out of 20, that wasn't a tip off to him being just a smart dude.
Oh, okay.
All right, fine. All right.
Let's get this catastrophe over with.
All right, here we go, John. Are you ready?
Yeah.
In
sir.
3, 2, 1. All right. Who said, from each according to his abilities, for each according to his needs?
Franklin Roosevelt.
Yeah, that's not right. Okay, it was Karl Marx. Neil Armstrong was the first man to set foot on the moon. Who was the first American sent to orbit the Earth?
Alan Shepard.
Excellent. Diamond and graphite are two forms of the same element.
Yeah, I see what you're doing. You're asking me one from last time to see how stupid I am, right?
No.
Let's see. Carbon.
Okay. The Wizard of Menlo Park said genius is 99% perspiration, 1% inspiration.
Who said that? You're asking me?
Yeah, no, that's what you're telling me. Who said that?
Say that question again.
The Wizard of Menlo Park said genius is 99% perspiration, 1% inspiration. Who is that genius?
Oh. No idea.
All right. Thomas Alva Edison.
Okay.
He's the creator of both Jeopardy and the Wheel of Fortune.
Alex Trebek. No, wait. For Griffin.
Okay.
All right, just one of those. Give it to me.
Yeah. He was the first person ever to appear on the cover of the Rolling Stone.
I see the pattern here.
Yeah, these actually, John.
It was one of the Beatles. I narrowed down to that. John Lennon.
Okay, that's right.
That's what I was going to guess. Oh.
This was the capital of... John Lennon. That's right. This was the capital of the U.S. from 1789 to 1790.
Philadelphia.
Nope, it was New York City.
Ah.
By the way, you've actually heard all these questions before. I pulled all of these questions from the 15 times we've played before.
Oh, no, I know. Didn't I just say that? You pulled all of these from previous shows.
Yes, I did.
Okay. Some of them were longer than others.
Oh, that's right. Therefore, there's no reason to remember any of them. Edwin Land invented this camera in 1947.
Polaroid.
Very good. This mixed drink is made with gin, lemon, and powdered sugar.
Gin, lemon, and powdered sugar. You really asked me this question?
Yes, I did.
Gin, lemon, and powdered sugar. I say it. I'm about to say gin fizz.
Okay, no, it is a Tom Collins.
Oh,
Tom
I should know that. There's no powdered sugar in a Tom Collins. I'm not accepting that.
Okay.
I used to bartend. There's no powdered sugar in
a Tom Collins mix they put in there.
Supermodel.
Sweet and sour gin and tonic water with the cherry.
Are you challenging? Is that what you're saying?
I'm challenged out for future reference.
All right.
I don't think it's going to make a difference. Just ask me the one about what's the official Israeli airline. That one I always get.
Yeah, that one's not here today. Here we go. Oh, okay.
John, every time we get you on the air with another guy, you're always fighting with him.
Yeah. All right, and this time we've got two Jews fighting, so what chances do the world have? Supermodel Elle McPherson was born in this country.
One more time?
Supermodel Elle McPherson was born in this country.
Is that a true or false question? Are you asking me, is that true?
What country was supermodel Elle McPherson born in?
Oh, what country was she born in? I thought she was born in this country. Elle McPherson was born... Australia?
Wow, that's right. What is the name of the galaxy to which the Earth's sun belongs?
Planet Zetron, I don't know.
Okay. It is, in fact, the Milky Way. Planet Zetron is not the right answer.
Planet Zetron is another.
I should have known that one. I just had one earlier today.
And it satisfies your hunger.
Yeah.
But doesn't make you any smarter, apparently. What is the English translation of the Latin phrase cogito ergo sum?
Can you hear me now?
Yeah. Say one more time.
What is the English translation of the Latin phrase cogito ergo sum?
No idea. I know caveat emptor means.
Okay.
I substitute that.
Yeah. Okay. In cognac, what do the letters VSOP stand for?
On what?
Cognac, VSOP.
Cognac, VSOP.
Yeah.
No idea.
Yeah, we shouldn't even try anymore. All right. By the way, the answer is very special, old, and pale.
Honestly, you would never ask me that. Cause I may not know shit, but I have a great memory.
Yeah.
All right. I got that one wrong, man.
Yeah, all right. Well, tell me about this one. Name one of the two original Nobel Prizes.
one of the two winners?
No, no. They were the categories for one of the two original Nobel Prizes.
Right. This I remember you asking me, and I still can't remember.
Yeah, because you never...
Because I was going to say, well, the Nobel Peace Prize, but then there was something where that didn't make sense, because that would be too easy. So I'm going to say chemistry.
Okay, that's actually right. It was chemistry and physics. Peace, literature, and economics were added later. But now you know why we only do 10 questions. Parviz and Sherry have left the room. All right, this well-known actor is the father of Emilio Estevez.
Martin Sheen.
Okay. He won 7 gold medals for swimming in the 1972 Olympics.
Mark Smith.
All right, daughter of another well-known actor. She's the youngest person ever to win an Oscar.
She's what of an actor?
A daughter.
Oh, okay. Tatum O'Neill.
You're looking shit up, dude, aren't you?
No, I'm in my car. I'm sitting there in front of a freaking liquor store.
His given name is Gordon Sumner.
Gordon Sumner?
Gordon Sumner?
Gordon Sumner?
Gordon Sumner.
So I'm supposed to figure out who this person is? No. The only thing that can come to mind is Gordon Lightfoot.
Okay, no, it's Sting.
Okay.
Who was the first host of Saturday Night Live in 1975?
Oh, another one I should know. John Lennon, I'm just kidding. First host of Saturday Night Live in 75. I don't know.
You hear that silence? That's the audience leaving, my friend.
Yeah.
Soon to be an edit.
Yeah. It's George Carlin.
Oh, okay.
And all interstate highways that run coast from coast end in what number?
0.
There you go.
He must have got 10.
But there, well, let's see. We should add it up here. Hold on a second. John got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
Holy crap!
13.
Nice.
13 out of 20 for all questions that he's asked before.
Doug the same question.
I asked Doug the same questions. He's okay. Never heard of before. Doug Sovereign got 17 out of 20. He, in fact, is the winner.
Woo!
Of Win John DeCoven's Money, the Doug Sovereign Mega Challenge.
Mega Challenge! Mega Challenge! Only this Sunday at 8 p.m. Mega Challenge!
But you know what you can do, seriously? You can edit this. Any of you ever watch Rockstar?
Yes, I do every week.
That's a great show, but I'm so pissed that they leave that chick Zyra on there. But anyways, have you noticed they edit it? It's like they cut out all kinds of stuff. You can do the same thing.
Well, you mean when they're at the house?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, they're editing it to so America can vote a certain way, but I agree. Last night's episode sucked.
Very disappointing. You should be on there, Barbie.
I should be. That way I can be kicked off the first week so I can come back to the podcast.
Hey, John? John? You still there, John?
I'm here.
Yeah, if you want to talk to Parviz, you can call him on his cell phone after the show, okay?
Okay.
Wow.
We'll do that.
I mean, it's not that this isn't interesting for everybody else. No, wait. That's exactly what it is. This is not interesting for everybody else.
So you can send that money. I take PayPal. I take check, you know.
Okay,
Doug,
well,
thank
me
you.
Your email.
Thank you so very, very much for being on the show today. We really appreciated it, and hopefully maybe one of these questions will come up during your run on Jeopardy, and you'll have this big kind of sly smile.
Do you know when you're going to be on yet, Doug?
Sometime between August and April. That's all I know.
Okay.
Yeah, you've just helped with my training by adding a little more. I narrowed it to John Lennon and Bob Dylan on Rolling Stone. I came up with the wrong one, but now I know. John
there
Lennon
go.
Is good.
There you go.
I'll remember that we're in the Milky Way a little more quickly.
This is a pleasure. Thank you so very much.
Thank you,
Rob.
Have
thank
fun.
You, Doug.
All right, John, you're doing more stuff over at Tommy T's. Is that right?
Yeah, every Tuesday, Laugh Law Comedy Showcase. And keep your eye out. Oh, Doug, maybe you know this. The Meshuggah Comedy Tour is my latest concept. You know how to spell Meshuggah?
Do you want me to spell it?
Yeah.
M-E, little apostrophe, S-H-U-G-A-N-E-H. Close anyway, right?
There's like 30 different spellings.
I was going to say, that's got to be one of them.
Okay.
How is this a fucking show?
Could be N-A-H.
Yeah.
Like Hanukkah. Spell it any way you want.
All right.
You have lost total control.
Apparently, I lost control of the show completely. Yeah. All right. All right, listen,
okay,
thanks very much.
Thank you.
Bye, John.
Be good. Take care, guys. All right.
Bye-bye. Thanks, Robin. Bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, we're going to take a break. We'll come back. I think what we'll do is we'll put Jason Nathanson and Sean Meehan on the phone together so that
good.
We can do like a little combo kind of thing there, a little chicken tenders kind of combo. And we'll take a break. We'll play this week's roadshow story thing.
Can't wait.
I know you can't. Nice job at the end there with the whole win John DeCoven's Doug thing. I was
thank you. I've been working on it. I just don't feel the love on
got,
this.
No, baby. I love you, baby. Take me back.
Are we going to be able to do that one more time before the podcast's over? Because I've got three or four in my bag.
If you want.
Let's try one right now.
If you want. All right. You have been listening to a very special episode of Win John DeCoven's Money, the Doug Sovereign Mega Challenge.
Mega Challenge. Mega Challenge. You're not going to like me when I'm angry.
All right.
The Incredible Hulk reference.
Nicely done.
Thank you.
All right. How many of those did you guys get right?
Beans don't burn.
You know, we didn't get a chance with Doug. You know, his answers were so quick.
Isn't that great?
You know, yeah,
he's just like, he just fucking knew him.
Yep.
It's so cool. I was hoping he'd go 20 for 20.
Well, I'm sure he will next time. Because
Yeah. And I love the fact that John is arguing about whether or not I read these to him before.
But John, in his defense, did very well.
He did very well for questions he's heard before.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty good.
Well, you've heard these questions before. Well, that's not true. You haven't heard all of them before. You only heard the ones that we've done on this show.
But your last radio show was back in 2001?
2001.
Yeah,
a long time ago.
That's pretty good.
It was a long time ago.
Yeah.
I don't remember stuff from 4 years ago.
I don't remember anything.
I don't remember where I put my underwear.
Whoa. Mega challenge. Where's my underwear? Was that a Scud missile? Oh, there's my limelight. What's that thing called? Chewbacca.
Chewbacca. All right, we'll take a break. Come back on the other side. You're listening to Schnauzer Logic, the podcast. We'll be back with Sean Meehan. Do a little Comic-Con thing. And Jason Nathanson, who's traveling around the country in a 1988 VW van. It's going to be sweet.
And a plumber update.
And we'll do a plumber update before we go.
Okay.
All right, stick around.
That's the trouble around here. Talk, talk, talk. Oh, sometimes I think I must go mad.
We'll be back with more Schnauzer Logic.
1, 2, 3, 7.
Australia. All the way to Raleigh, King. Heave away, haul away, haul away. You hear me sing. Now for South Australia. So watch out.
stories.
Crack me up.
Oh, yeah.
They're funny.
Keeps me entertained.
Funny, funny comedy.
Those tree-hugging sissies.
And now your host, Brian Cox.
Hi, everybody. Brian Cox. Road Stories of the Real Highway Comics. You know, I kind of touch on a lot of the crappy stuff that happens to us while we're on the road. But, hey, what about the good stuff? Check this out. A buddy of mine, Brian Stollery, very funny comic. Anyway, he got invited to be the opening act for, get this, Weird Al Yankovic. Cross country tour, big thing. You think that'd be a lot of fun? Well, the shows were fun, but Brian only got paid, get this, $150 a show. No accommodation figured in, and no food figured in. So Brian's profits were rather slim, let me tell you, by the end of that tour. Now, so far, my big thrill was working with Tom Jones and Wayne Newton. And I gotta tell you, those two guys, class acts, paid well and treated me with respect. Let's get down to story time. I was teamed up with a comic named Tanya Lee. Maybe you've seen her on television. She's about 3'5", something like that. She does her show standing on a stool so the audience can see her. You see, I'm 6'3", so we're traveling along. We're telling, tall jokes, short jokes, that type of thing. And she told me the story of the last really tall guy she worked with. His name was Brad. Tanya was the MC and opener. It was her job to get the crowd warmed up and then bring on Brad, all 7'3" of them. And by the way, these two had never, ever worked together before. They just chatted a little bit before the show, and then everything started. So Tanya got the crowd all warmed up. She gave Brad the big intro, and he comes on stage, and he's supposed to help her off the stool. You see, pick her up and put her down. Anyway, he comes on stage. He picks her up, stands in front of the audience. He was supposed to put her down, but no, he held her up in front of the audience and goes, ladies and gentlemen, this is really too much for me. I want to thank the Academy. The crowd erupted with laughter, and everybody was happy. Brad was laughing. Tanya was laughing. Anyway, so Tanya goes on now, and she's doing cruise ships. She's doing very well in the world of stand-up comedy. And also, Brad Garrett, yeah, went on to become the cop brother on Everybody Loves Raymond. That's it for Road Stories of the Real Highway Comics. I'm Brian Cox.
Welcome back. We are about an hour, 30 minutes into this episode of Schnauzer Logic. Being recorded on Thursday for a change. It's the 27th of July, 2006. My name is Robin Goldstein. Your host, buddy, and pal. Straight up, vegetarian, lens, returning boy, trapped by a car, and apparently she's now working on cruise ships, which is a
very nice,
very successful.
Everybody Loves Raymond.
Very successful.
I did not know.
No. He was on Everybody Loves
Raymond. I understand. I did not know.
You yawned, I think, 4 times during that. And that was only a 2-minute and 37-second episode.
Robin?
What's the deal there, boy?
Robin?
Come on. No, this is all about truth and honesty.
You want the truth?
I want the truth.
Nobody's funnier than you.
But those stories aren't funny. They're just interesting.
I understand. It's depressing when somebody gets $150 to be an opening act for Weird Al Yankovic. It's depressing.
But that wasn't what it was about.
That's all I got.
It was about being lifted over Brad Garrett's shoulders. That's comedy gold, my friend.
Can't wait for next week.
Okay. We're going to keep playing these.
Oh, I can't wait.
All right, we are back. And so Sean Meehan, who was our good friend and pal and what'd you say?
I said cop. I said confidant.
Okay. usually sits in the other seat, and he's not been here for a couple of weeks. He wasn't here the last show that I did before my mom passed away.
Yes.
He wasn't able to make that dental emergency, and he wasn't able to be here last week, and he's not able to be here this week. But we've managed to snag him on the phone, so we're going to punch down the button and say "Sona Vista" and hello to Sean Meehan. Welcome to Schnauzer Logic, our friend.
Welcome.
Okay.
Don't I get to say welcome too?
Yes, of course you do.
Welcome to my phone. Welcome to my fabulous phone call. You know, I'm here on the cruise ship, and it's just, it's been a fabulous run. I'm sorry, but making the elderly laugh on my cruise ship adventure has just been far more important than doing the podcast.
Well, and maybe sometime Brian Cox will do a little episode of Road Stories for you.
Yeah, you know, I'm always afraid it's going to be the other Brian Cox, the one who played Dr. Lecter.
All right, and we're going to combine a couple of segments here. So what we normally do during this time is we normally talk to Jason Nathanson, and so we feel like we owe him his proper introduction here, so let's play his music. Hold on a second. Wait, that's the wrong... That's also for Jason. He liked... Last week he mentioned that he liked the hamster dance so much.
Kill the hamsters!
Hold on, so... All right, good. So now we'll play the official Jason Nathanson music. Hold on, here we go. I don't know, I like the hamster dance, don't you?
Absolutely.
Maybe we can make hamster dance the official Jason Nathanson now. Hold on. From Berlin down to Belize. Take me for a ride on a slow boat to China. Tell me where in the world is the bald Jewish guy in the 1988 VW van? All right. The bald Jewish guy in the 1988 VW van who was arrested in Canada. And then, being too small, they threw him back. Jason Nathanson, welcome to Schnauzer Logic as well.
I don't know what's worse, the hamster dance or the Brian Cox road stories.
You know, it's funny. I was talking to... Wait, what does that
Thank
mean?
Thank you.
Oh, please, don't go piling on Brian Cox.
I didn't pile anything. Himself.
First of all, Brian Cox is Canadian. If you were in trouble in Canada, we would have called Brian to come bail you out, dude.
Well, he'd probably be too busy on a cruise ship, since apparently that's the penultimate comic gig these days.
Okay, fine. I was talking to Jan Karam earlier today, and I mentioned to her that you were stopped at the border of Canada last week, and and you're just going to try to blow by this like it didn't happen? I don't think so, my friend. This is not Soviet Russia where we can erase the past. And Jan said to me, you know, she said, is he okay? And I said, yeah, you know, after a suitable amount of a Canadian butt-fucking, he was let go again. And Jan said to me, does that mean he can never go back to Canada again? And I said, no. As a matter of fact, I said to him that he could come back in 20 minutes. And then I said to Jan, you know, if you eat a hot dog, you have to wait 30 minutes before you go into the water. So apparently, yeah. Canada is less dangerous than going into a pool.
Pretty much.
any deleterious effects from that that experience you had last week? Any night sweats or anything like that?
Well, when I did get to Niagara Falls the other day and Canada was right on the other side, I started to shake uncontrollably.
Yes.
It was a little traumatic to see it right across the water there.
But you haven't been stopped? No, nobody's called you or anything like that?
No, I've been okay so far. But there could be something waiting for me in the mail at home.
See,
who knows?
You dodged a Canadian bullet as far as we know.
I did.
All
so
right.
Far.
Well, let's get your segment out of the way. I mean, let's get right to your segment. Let's get right to it. And unfortunately, because of a technical scrope, we didn't catch you on KSCO this morning. Were you there?
Yes, I was.
All right, good. So that
was the greatest segment ever. Thanks.
Well, you know, you've been using our segment as practice for talking to Rosemary, so we figured turnabout is fair play. So
yes.
All right.
Except you've caught me on one of the most boring weeks so far of the trip.
I'm crossing my arms. Entertain me. Go.
Well, I no pressure or anything.
Yeah.
I went to Boston after my little jaunt up in Maine last week, and stayed with my friend Danielle. That was a good time going around Boston, one of your home cities, I hear, Robin. And went to Harvard, walked around there. Basically had a kind of a tourist weekend with my friend Danielle. Nothing too exciting, though. I mean, no arrests, no Oprah sightings, nothing quite like that. And then, are you guys still there?
Yeah.
Or am I just that boring?
No, we're fascinated. No, please, no, yeah. you're entertaining us. Go ahead.
And then
because you had a chance to work out all this material with Rosemary, so you know, we want to hear the fruits of that plumage.
The juicy parts.
Yeah, we went
so from there, I left and went to Niagara Falls,
Slowly I turned, step by step, inch, sorry, Three Stooges. No, is it Three Stooges or?
Three's Company.
No, fuck you. Is it Abbott and Costello or Three Stooges?
Three Stooges.
Lauren Hardy.
No, you don't even know this. Goddamn. Sean, what is it?
I don't know because I don't know this either.
Oh, he's in jail. He talks to some guy, and is it Three Stooges?
It's
Curly?
Yep.
And he goes, oh, yeah, it was in Niagara Falls. And the guy goes, Niagara Falls. Slowly I turn, step by step, inch by inch, until I strangle him. And he goes after him every time. Mm-hmm. This is classic comedy. Sorry, Jason, didn't mean to take away from your segment. Go ahead. Entertain us some more.
Yeah, very nice. So went to Niagara Falls, went on the...
Niagara Falls. Slow.
do you need me for the segment, or...
No, really. You're like the sugar in a Tom Collins mix.
Yeah, okay.
I apologize.
So went on the Maid of the Mist, of course, which everybody has to go on, which was a lot of fun going into the base of the falls and getting drenched with all the hot, cute tourist chicks around me getting drenched as well. It serves as a nice kind of wet t-shirt party.
You got nothing, right?
No, I got nothing.
Okay.
And then went walked around, you know, there's the American Falls, Bridal Falls, and Horseshoe Falls. Walked around all those and was really just kind of awestruck by the whole thing. One of the experiences on the trip so far that's lived up to the hype. The Grand Canyon kind of didn't, but Niagara Falls absolutely did, being one of the wonders of the world. And since then, the weather started to turn on me. It's gotten really, I know it's been hot in the rest of the country so far, but up in New England it was kind of nice. Now it's just gotten really hot and muggy as I left New York and drove kind of south and into, I'm in Michigan right now, where it's hot and muggy and rainy and humid and thundering and lightning and I'm sitting in my car on a campground.
Winds are from the northeast at how many miles an hour? What's barometric pressure doing? What's visibility? Get some visibility for us?
I got zero visibility right
zero
now.
Zero visibility. Okay. All right.
Hey, Jason. Jason.
Yes.
When you're on Rose, is it Rosemary?
Yeah, KSCO.
When you're on KSCO, yeah. How often do you mention this podcast?
This podcast? I think I've mentioned it once.
Yeah,
maybe
at the
twice.
Very at the no, I listened. It's just once. Yeah, it was
okay,
just once. That's fine. No, that's okay. We don't need their help. And I'm not even sure we need your help. No, I mean...
No, I think this is the difference is we got him on a Thursday. We normally get him on a Wednesday.
That's true.
When the story is fresh, hot, and ripe.
Oh, what
and then when he
is,
sees Rosemary, it's a bruised banana.
You're saying
KSCO
sucked all the juice out of this.
Exactly. Is that right,
There's
Jason?
There's no life left in the story.
Is that right?
Story's not worth telling
anymore.
I feel like
I've missed something here.
No, you don't have much to say about this week. The travels this week wasn't terribly exciting, right?
No, there hasn't been a lot.
I mean, there's nothing more exciting than being caught with pot.
Right, pretty much.
With a gloved fist up your butt.
That's pretty much it, yeah.
Right. So after that incident...
In the library where the candlestick.
After that, yeah, things are all kind of downhill from there.
Right, so now, Jason, now you're just
Colonel
resorting...
Mastered
Jason,
in Ottawa with the rope.
Now you're just resorting to the weather. You're giving us a weather report. I'm expecting sports after that, and I'm expecting travel or food or something.
Hey, have a little music break. What do you think?
That's good to be. Let's have the Doppler radar.
A little music break. Here we go. Everybody, let's dance.
I think he hung up. Jason, are you still there?
Yes, I'm still here. Right. I'm contemplating hanging up. Though.
Don't hang up. Don't hang up.
Here we go.
You're an integral part of this show. Hey, Sean.
All right.
Hey.
Sean. I just want to say, Sean, I miss you. It's been over 2 months. You haven't been here, and it has not been the same.
So, Jason, right. let me, obviously we're fucking with you today because we can.
And it's very hot in this room.
Yeah, it's hot in this room, and we're fucking with you. That's all. And so we love you. But, I mean, do you feel like you're getting to the natural end? Does it feel like you're on the other side of the peak of the experience?
It kind of feels like it started to be that way. I mean, as I headed out west, leaving Boston, and I'm running out of money.
Well, there you go.
I feel like things are kind of slowing down here. I feel like, you know, I'm going
backwards because I'm going back west. And I don't know how much there is to see, how much more there is to see and do.
Well, I mean, there's a whole country that, you know, you can, I mean, you're going to go to Chicago, right?
Yes, I'm going to Chicago, going to spend time with, for me, the money thing weighs on my mind.
Okay.
Can I give you a travel tip? Yes.
Can I give you a travel tip? And this comes from a guy who worked at Expedia. For the traveler on a budget, if you go back through Vegas, you can get a $5 hand job right in the parking lot behind the Stratosphere. So okay. For the budget-conscious traveler, head to the Stratosphere.
Do you have a name? Is there a company or somebody I should ask?
I think you're just going to have to burn a little shoe leather when you get there.
Yeah, I'm guessing there's no website for $5handjobs.com, maybe. Oh, go register that quick.
Yeah. Little boy hands.
Division of $5 blowjobs. $5 industries.
What about getting
a job, dude? I mean, you know, all kidding aside, what about getting a job for a few weeks in some town that looks kind of interesting and making a little bit of pocket money and like Gay Vito in The Sopranos?
What kind of jobs would those be, though? You know, because I figure most places want to hire somebody that they think is going to be around for a little while.
Well,
don't have to tell them.
Yeah, how would they know that you're? How would you? You know, how would they? If you leave the van's motor running every day, that may be a tip off. But other than that, they probably wouldn't know. You're like Clint Eastwood. You're the High Plains Drifter.
That's true.
Bill Bixby, I'm like American Hulk.
Like Bill Bixby, you're constantly searching for another place to get a reverse blast of gamma radiation.
Exactly. You don't want to piss off Jason. You're not going to like him when he's mad.
You might not even like him. If you don't, dude, that takes the pressure off of you. You may not like me at any time. Can I have a job?
Well, I mean, so do you have enough money to buy gas to get the rest of the way across? We need to take up a collection, dude.
Oh, yeah, I do have enough money, but it's limiting the amount of time that I have to be out here. So I feel like I'm kind of rushing through the rest of this.
Gotcha.
So rather than, you know, the nice, easy pace I've been at so far.
Well, you could sell the horns on the top of the van.
No, I would never sell those. Those are priceless.
By the way, we're going to have to put that photograph up. I don't know if I mentioned this on... Did I mention this on the air? I don't think I did. Did you hear about my dad's horns?
No.
So when Jason stopped by my folks' house, I was there, you know, cleaning stuff out for about a week, and Jason stopped by my folks' house, and it was the last day before I was coming back, so I'd already been there for a week. I was completely burned out. It was hot. It was sticky, but he was really sweet, and he came by and visited, and we went and had something to eat, and we were walking around the house. It's kind of, you know, in shambles and being pulled apart and stuff. And when we drove cross country, when I was 10 years old, we stopped, I think it was Montana or Nebraska, and my dad got a pair of, longhorns, Texas longhorn, kind of longhorn horns that are mounted in a piece of tooled leather and then affixed to a piece of wood. I don't know. It's, you know, it's not walnut, but, you know, some kind of, you know, strong hardwood. And it hung over the kitchen door. That was my dad. You know, my dad had interesting, he was an artist, so he had interesting artistic interests all over the place. And when Jason came in, we were kind of walking through the house, just kind of showing where I grew up. And I said, you know, those would actually look great on the van. He's like, I totally would do that. I was like, no, really? He goes, no, really? And so I said, my dad would be thrilled to know that his horns are traveling the country again. Jason took the horns, and he sent me some photographs this week. And you've mounted the horns on the van.
Yeah, they're mounted on the top with some rope and a little Velcro sticky tape.
And you get any comments from anybody about that?
No, nobody said anything so far.
Okay.
I'm waiting for them to fly off and cause a major traffic accident. I think somebody will have something to say about it.
Jason, I would not show up at your first job interview with horns on the van. Take it off quickly. Starbucks does not want to see horns on a van.
Sign of the devil.
I don't think any job would want to see me show up in the van.
That's true.
So where are you going to be now? Where are you going to next?
I'm going to Chicago on Saturday.
Windy
right
City?
Now, I'm in somewhere Michigan. I'm not even quite sure exactly where I am.
All right. Well, we want people to send Jason suggestions about what he can do to sort of enjoy himself as he continues his trek across the country on very little money. Go to the website. It's www.schnauzerlogic.com and send information. Or they can go to your website. You've got an incredible blog. It's randomshow.blogspot.com. We've got lots of listeners. We've got hundreds of our own listeners. We've got hundreds of some new listeners from Charles Lacudera. We've got all listeners from Trans FM. So we've got over 1,000 listeners to the show. Comments. I mean, you're not the first person to make the trek cross country on a limited budget. There's got to be things that you can do along the way that will entertain you that don't require a box of Kleenex.
And quite frankly, look at what Lewis and Clark did.
The comedians?
Very, very limited budget. Indians helped them. Native Americans helped them.
That's it, dude. You need to pick up an Indian chick. You need to stop. You need to go to the closest 7-Eleven, and you need to find an Indian girl and make her your
That Indian
Saka
right.
Saka
like the Lando Lakes girl.
Exactly.
And you know, one thing I'm curious about though, I heard there was a study that I guess this is done annually, where the major cities in the United States are rated for singles, how good a city they represent for single individuals looking for love. And Boston was very high on the list. It was either number one or number two. I don't recall. It was up there with Denver. And did you find that Boston just had this outstanding singles vibe? Were you tempted to stay just because you felt that you know your shot there was better than just about anywhere else?
Nah, my shot's pretty poor pretty much everywhere, so it Boston didn't do much for me.
You were a funny guy and full of pop culture wisdom.
All right, here's what we're going to do. We'll take a quick break. We'll keep you two guys on hold. All right, we're going to come back and finish up the show. We're going to throw in a little taste of Sean's visit down south. We need to do a. We don't need to do a plumbing update. We can. You give me. You want me to steal third? You want me to bunt slide? What the fuck, dude? I got a booger in my nose. What the hell are you doing? Help me out here. Words. That's why there are microphones.
Sean.
Yeah.
you're always like a fucking taxi dispatcher. You feel like you got to push the button first and then get a response. Sean. Yes.
Over.
Every fucking time. You did it with Doug Sovereign. You do it with Jason. You do it with everybody. This is an interactive program. You go, Sean. Yes. I was wondering, can you stop by
He's not going to recover. You might as well just move on.
All right.
Oh, shit. That is funny. Right. Sean. Forget it.
All right.
Sean, I miss you, and I'll come back soon.
Over.
All right, we'll take a good break. We'll be back on the other side, and we'll finish up this nonsense. You're listening to Schnauzer Logic. Stick around.
Gay boy.
Schnauzer Logic.
Here we go.
Welcome back. We're down to our last 6 minutes or so of Schnauzer Logic. Robin Goldstein and Sherry Stevens. Parviz has left the stadium. He had to take off, but you're still with us. You'll be here for the very end.
I will be.
He couldn't hang around for the last six fucking minutes because he's a pro. Hey, Sean. Sean. And on the line with us is Sean. Sean.
Yes, Sean. Sean. Sean D. Sean.
And Jason Nathanson, you still there, my friend?
Yes, I'm still here. Having a lovely conversation with Sean off air, actually.
But there
probably
you
better
go.
Better than the segment. We do.
It always is. We played the hamster dance again for you in your honor. I know that you said it was one of your. I think you said it was one of your favorites.
Absolutely, love hamster dance as much as possible.
There you go. And Sean was not able to be with us this week, but we've only got a few minutes left, but maybe you can give us a little tease. You were down in San Diego.
I was. I went down to San Diego. Every year in San Diego, sometime in mid-July, they have an enormous convention. It's the Comic and Pop Art Convention, or Pop Culture Convention. And it is enormous. I mean, next to something like the Personal Electronics Show in Las Vegas, this is one of the biggest conventions going in the country. It is huge. It shuts down the whole city. San Diego is, you know, the infrastructure is pressed to the max. So it's kind of a wonderful experience, even if you don't go to the con, because you walk down there and everybody in any kind of public venue is from the con. So you're in an Indian restaurant, you know, 3 miles from the convention center, and the place is filled with Darth Vaders and stormtroopers and Batman, you know, all eating, you know, chicken masala. It's great. I would very much recommend it to anyone who has any sort of genre interest. It's not just comics. It's, you know, everything sci-fi, comic, fantasy genre.
How long were you there?
I was there for 2 days.
Oh, great.
It's like a 5-day event, but...
And did you go to see anything in particular or just to kind of take this all in?
I went to just take it in. I was going to go with a friend who, you know, is a real devotee, really understands the Japanese comics and the American comics, is involved with all aspects of sort of science fiction television. And he wasn't able to come, but I had already made the plan.
Wow.
So down I went, and I met some amazing people. Ray Bradbury.
Wow.
Probably everyone's familiar with.
Sure.
Ray Harryhausen.
Yeah.
Maybe some people who enjoy fantasy filmmaking are familiar with. Probably my most interesting experience, there is this strange conjunction. I don't know how long this has been going on, but it's new to me, where Playboy-type centerfolds have comics written about them, where they are sort of themselves, but they don't lead their mundane lives of photo shoots and what have you in the comics. They have they have alter egos with powers and things like that. And there was a panel of them. And I went up and I asked them, what, you know, do you guys like comic books? Or were you raised with them and kind of excited about it or what have you? They hadn't even read their comic book. So
well, can they read it all?
That's they had powers. I said, do you have any powers? And one very sweet, but, you know, not the sharpest knife in the drawer, blonde girl said, I have no idea. I haven't even read these.
Listen.
And the girl next to her, an equally beautiful brunette, just proving the stereotype, by the way, said, oh my God, you totally have powers. Look. There's a beam coming out of your hand. You're blowing up a rock. Oh my God, you've got powers.
Listen, we ran long today. We've got only about a minute left, so hold on to that. That's a little tease for maybe we can get more of your impressions of Comic-Con next week. Is that right?
Yeah, hopefully in the studio.
Outstanding. We'd love to have you. And Jason, where are you going to be next week when we talk to you?
Probably South Dakota.
Oh, excellent. Tom Harkin state. We're going to South Dakota, Tom Harkin. All right, well, we'll talk to you guys then. Have a very safe week, safe travels, and take care of yourself. We'll talk to you then, all right? Be good, guys. Bye-bye. All right, and that's it. We're out of show. Thanks so much for sitting in with me.
You're welcome.
I appreciate that. Until next week, I love you, Dad. I love you, Mom. I miss you both. Show up. Pay attention. Tell the truth. Don't be attached to the outcome. We'll be back next week. Tell your friends. And by the way, if you're listening to us on through iTunes Music Store, go to the iTunes Music Store and write a review. We haven't asked for reviews in a long time. This is show number 21. We're adults now. We can ask for sexual favors, or at least ask for reviews. We'd love to get some reviews, get a little bit higher up in the whole new podcast thing over on iTunes. So just go over to iTunes. If you have any questions, send us an email, robinschnauzerlot.com. We'll see you next week. Take care. Have fun. Bye-bye.
This is over now, and you just got to deal with it.
I want you to know it's over.
It's over, Johnny. It's over!
It's over, Harvey. I'm sorry. I need to get on with my life.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.